Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the HR Room Podcast by Insight HR, hosted by yours truly, Owen Lines. Today's episode is another in our Back in Business series, guiding HR teams and organizations through the challenges and outlook for the next stage in the world of work. And today we're discussing a topic that I think we all have a strong outlook on, given the happenings in recent months and years. And one topic that I think has become hugely important as we kind of navigate and manage another time of change is the topic of kindness in leadership. So joining us to talk to us about this topic today, we have our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary, how are you?
Hi, Owen. Good morning and welcome, Anna. It's lovely to have you with us.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
And we're delighted, as Mary says, to be joined by Anna Pinkerton. So Anna is the UK and Europe's leading expert in post-trauma stress work and best-selling author of books such as Smile Again and the upcoming My Kind of Life. How are you, Anna?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Brilliant. All good. So look, we'll kick off and I'll come to yourself first, Anna. Okay. I suppose a leading expert in trauma, stress and kind of rewiring to recovery and all those good things. You've been on a bit of journey yourself. Can you talk to us a little bit about your journey and I suppose what got you to, I suppose, your experience in trauma, stress and rewiring and all those kind of things?
Yeah, well, I'm in my 28th year of clinical practice. I know I do lots more training with inside companies now, but I'm actually a clinician primarily. And 10 years ago, even though I specialized in trauma, I ended up with PTSD myself. And it was an interesting experience. It was a massive privilege, as bad as it was. I was able to see this marriage between everything I knew clinically up until that time, which was nearly 20 years at that point. And then I had this opportunity to know what trauma was from the inside out. And, you know, it was a bit cheeky of me, really, because I thought I knew a thing or two about trauma until I was really, truly in it. So I'd had childhood trauma, but obviously I'd somewhat recovered and healed from that. And then I had this recent trauma as an adult, and it taught me so much being inside that neurological disarray, really about how out of control you are. And I was really fascinated from the very beginning of studying trauma from 1993, that really actually there was thousands of us, if not millions of us, that were wounded, but it was hidden. And that really fascinated me because most trauma you can't see. So it's not like having the broken leg and the broken arm. Most traumatized people are actually, you know, a kind of walking wounded. And that really fascinated me. And I realized, I studied partly in the States, and I realized whilst I was there that this must be affecting not just individuals, but families and communities, countries, as you well know. And I was just determined to try to make a difference in that field, really.
Brilliant. And I think then when it comes to, I suppose, the corporate setting, the work setting, the workplace, I think one of the key things you talk about, one of the big topics you talk about is this, I suppose, kindness and leadership. Can you talk to us a bit about what that means, what that is, how we can kind of understand that a bit more?
Yeah, there's a real nuance in trauma. And part of the worst parts of trauma and the things that make it difficult to recover from is how we relate to ourselves based on it. So it's often not the events or the incidents or the trauma itself that we're still suffering from 10 years later. It's usually the decisions we've made about ourselves based on the experience, right? So if somebody's in an accident, and exactly what it is, it's an accident, it's a mistake. But if that person then says you're an idiot for the rest of your life and you tell yourself that 200 times a day, that matters to how you affect your life and how you affect the lives of people around you. Now, that really matters to corporates, to companies, big or small, because if you've got one person in that's traumatized, high level of inner brutality, then that affects the people next to them. A bit like when people say, oh, I'm picking up a vibe or an atmosphere. That's actually a real thing that neurologically we affect each other. So the reason I started to really focus on kindness to self and therefore kindness to others was trying to dig into what the antidote to the brutality would be. And I remember when I was in trauma, I felt so ridiculous and pathetic that trauma that had happened to me that I ought to have seen coming, which obviously you can't. That's a misnomer. You can't see a trauma coming. Otherwise, it wouldn't be trauma in a sense. But I turned it against myself so much that I realized that there was this fine detail in that would help me recover. And it had to be the exact opposite to the brutality. So that's what I did, was I swung the pendulum the other way and thought, well, if this brutality is going to keep me unwell, then it's got to be kindness and companionability to me, even though I can't feel it right now, that's going to be the exact antidote. And that's the same in organizations also. So people that show brutality in the workplace are unwell, they're very vulnerable, very sensitive, through no fault of their own, but they believe it's their fault. And inadvertently then they take it out on other people. And that really matters, because that changes the atmosphere of a workplace. It's productivity, how it's effective or not, whether it's a lovely place to be or not, how you come through challenging times or not, right? It really matters.
Absolutely. I think just building on that, Mary, I might kind of build on that by asking yourself. I think Anna just mentioned there just the times of change, the times of trauma. And obviously it's been quite the, I suppose, tumultuous, disruptive year for a lot of companies everywhere. So I suppose, Mary, how do you think kindness and leadership can affect a workplace culture, just building on what Anna has said there? How can a lack of it really kind of negatively affect organizations, teams everywhere?
I've seen it in, I suppose, many different ways over my career, throughout my lifetime, really. You know, that kind of brutality that might come from leadership, you know, and that can be as simple as expecting people to work crazy hours of work, irrespective of the impact that might have on them and their family and their lives and their happiness. I've seen it in things like when grievances are unresolved, and I've watched individuals who maybe raise a grievance at work and then slowly over a period of time, because the way in which they're being handled by the organization or by their leadership or their manager or HR, that person becoming traumatized and becoming mentally unwell over a period of time. When we carry out a workplace investigation, for instance, you know, sometimes that can run on for up to even a year, depending on how complex a situation is. And often I look at people over that period of time, and the person I first met versus the person I'm seeing 6 months, 12 months later is a different person. And it has always struck me that a little bit of kindness to those people at that time make a huge difference to individuals, and the unkindness that they experience in their workplace for whatever reason, whether that's perceived or actual, you know, has this impact or that effect on individuals. Over the course of the pandemic, I mean, the level of conflict has risen, the temperature has risen at work, and it's going to rise again with the vaccinated versus unvaccinated argument. You know, I've already seen conflict arising and unkindness arising where maybe, for instance, COVID has entered the workplace through someone, and all the colleagues looking around and saying, well, they were at a party. That may or may not be true, but speculating about maybe what a person has been doing or how they have been behaving. And then how people internalize that. I'm fascinated by And I'm fascinated by that concept of that inner brutality. And I think, you know, having had the privilege of that preview of your book, I think it's really fascinating in terms of, yeah, of course I can recognize myself. Oh, and I know you've read it too. You know, and I was really struck by that. Yeah, if you give yourself so many negative messages, then how does that impact on the people around you?
Mm. So, yeah, I think I suppose to kind of play devil's advocate for a minute when I ask this next question, I think with a topic like kindness, we've spoken there about the negative effects it can have. And it's obviously a very important consideration for companies, for leaders everywhere. I think when we're bringing things to the table, to the leadership team, the senior management team, the word kindness might sometimes be interpreted as maybe kind of a vague, kind of fluffy topic. And again, that's playing devil's advocate. But I think it might be a reality out there, whereas if we go to these high-paced senior leaders that want to just, I suppose, be effective and efficient in the things that they're doing, how do we bring up something like kindness at that leadership table? How do we get leaders to take this concept seriously? And I might come to yourself for that, Anna.
Well, I love this question, and I struggled with it myself, to be honest with you. So my business used to be called Kindness Incorporated, but I still operate under that name. And I still get messages on LinkedIn from business owners that say, I love the title. I love that. And I partly was wanting to think, I want something a little bit more rugged and a little bit more masculine because I'm going into the corporate world. And I thought, well, actually, that's me just going along with the ordinary. And actually, kindness is very difficult to determine. So in a way, you companies, organizations have a chance to create what that means for them. But I thought if I buy into that, then I'm doing exactly what they want me to do. And the point is to bring something that's soft, gentle, but actually incredibly robust, because kindness and companionability to self and to others is a much more robust methodology, if you like, than brutality. Brutality is brittle, unforgiving, inflexible, and unpleasant, right? So if that's the culture, then that atmosphere of that is not pleasant to be in. You're not going to get the best out of your people. And so kindness isn't about fluffy and boundaryless and pointless and you know, it's all, you know, fluffy bunny rabbits kind of thing. It's not that. It's actually true responsibility and creating an atmosphere within yourself that's robustly good and with good intention and lives with an ease and contentment. So if you imagine you're living with ease and contentment with inside yourself and you're rolling with life, that's how you're affecting other people. So if you want your team to get on board with something and be in solidarity with you, even if they've got to kind of do what you need them to do, and it's tough and challenging, if you have that kind of kindness and solidarity and companionability with it, you're more than likely to get them to come with you. Do you see? So I know you're absolutely right. It did seem so, but I thought that if I don't use it, I'm not doing the difficult thing. And I thought, well, just because it's difficult doesn't mean to say I shouldn't do it, right?
It's fascinating, Anna, because I think a lot of HR people struggle with getting funding for certain projects and initiatives that they know will do the organization good. And they know will have an impact ultimately on the bottom line and the organization and employee well-being and all of those things. And sometimes I think it's really about how they articulate that to the senior team rather than their ideas not having merit. And how do you think someone would go about recommending the kind of programs that you deliver within their organization? Where would they start?
Fabulous question. I mean, the My Kind of Life methodology is really taking the control where you can. And we're in a perfectly good example of that at the moment. There's lots we can't control about life, but what we do get to control is being able to go inside ourselves and do the work from the inside out. So this isn't like an off the shelf, oh, here's some techniques. This is every single leader has the opportunity to go inside and look what's there. But if they go in with companionability and kindness to self first, they're not going to break down whilst they have a look inside. So you can have lots of other leadership programs, but they'll struggle to incorporate the learning because the inner brutality is in the way. Inner brutality is basically a fancy word for a defense mechanism. Yeah, it keeps us away from pain. I mean, the offshoot of it is it in the end, it creates more pain, but it was there to protect us from our agonies. So when we're trying to learn from whatever the leadership program is, if we don't do that core work, we're perhaps only learning two nuggets of that. And the other thing is the leader doesn't stop affecting other people from the inside out. So that's why I think, well, let's do that work. Let's do that work, because that's how you're going to affect people, your life and other people's lives for the greater good. And this isn't about techniques. It's about relationship with self. That is your core indicator to how you are going to be effective and affect others. Do you see?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah,
so it's partly about taking on ideas or not. It's about incorporating them, integrating them, being them. That's why kindness isn't fluffy. It's incredibly robust. It means that you can pivot quickly. You can flex. You're not taken down by a challenge. You're rolling with challenges, not tripping over with them.
Absolutely. And I think, right. I suppose we spoke recently, Mary, actually on another podcast about the business case and the challenges of, I suppose, crafting a business case when you're bringing something like this from HR team to leadership. And I think this is, yet again, it's just another, I won't say just another, it's the wrong way to say it, but it's another opportunity to really kind of craft a business case, talk about what the negative impacts are, talk about the things we can do, and talk about how valuable it is. I think it kind of does fall under that one, Mary, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those things that I just find a lot of HR people struggle with. You know, it's, you know, telling that story, bringing the leadership team on board with them, getting the budget for, you know, a leadership development program that, you know, incorporates something like kindness. You know, how do you sell it upwards? And I think that's always the challenge for HR people. You know, I know so many HR people who are dealing with, you know, a difficult CEO or dealing with a difficult CFO, and, you know, struggle, you know, the idea that they'd approach them and say, you know, we need more kindness, not just in the organization at the bottom line, but from you. I think that could be quite challenging. So it's interesting to see where your kind of offering slots in there. How would someone go to their leader and say, I think you could benefit from this kind of development?
Well, everything is energy. So if there's high levels of inner brutality and it's obvious, then people are wasting quite a lot of energy. So the leaders that I've done the one-to-one work with that are now fully rewired into companionability, they tell me that they have 30% more energy. So what we can kind of surmise from that is that actually, so they were a third of their energy, around a third of their energy was being wasted by belittling themselves, demeaning themselves, and inadvertently doing that to others. Because if we don't do it for ourselves, we can't truly afford it for other people. So if we have no empathy for us, it's very hard to empathize for other people. There's no compassion for us. We struggle to have compassion for other people. So, I mean, the business case is obvious to me, but I get what you're saying. So if you didn't want to go in with the kindness message, what you could say is we need to turn the dial down on the brutality in this organization. Why? First of all, it's poisoning all of our talent and our expertise. It's wasting a third of our time. So let's have those hours back. Let's turn it into hours. Let's turn it into profit. Let's turn it into output. What would it look like if actually we weren't wasting that energy on this internal turmoil? And also, you would be reaching individuals saying, hey, we're offering you to do this work. And this isn't technique driven. And it's tricky, I know, because we're talking about relationship with self. But in a place where there's very little control, saying to somebody, hey, go inside, do the work there. First of all, they can do it really privately. You don't have to sit in a room and do this, right? And so-called take on the learning. It is hard because you're talking about rewiring. But once the wiring's done, it's done forever. That's the point of it.
Right? Yeah, it's fantastic.
So this is a type of resilience training, if you like, that doesn't go away. This is true resilience that's incorporated, embedded. It's not something that you're taking notes about. It's totally taken inside you. And then you move through life with greater ease and contentment. Then your drive is coming from a pure place. It's coming from desire and choice. Whereas brutality comes from fear often and whatever else your drivers are that use your energy up. If it comes down to choice and pure drive, then it comes from a more buoyant place.
Mm-hmm. I think then for HR teams in particular, I suppose HR is often the link between leadership and the kind of the wider employee base. And I think a work stream, a concept like this would tend to fall, I think, under HR to deliver and implement. I suppose the issue with HR taking on, I suppose, the nature of HR and the role it has as that kind of middle unit between leadership and the employee base is that a lot of HR teams tend to take on issues and maybe even some trauma by osmosis, I suppose, just by their relationship. I suppose, maybe coming to yourself, Mary, first, how important is it for HR professionals to be conscious of their own, obviously, approaches to kindness and things like this, but also to be conscious of their own trauma and their own, I suppose, stress and burnout?
Yeah, and the last 18 months had been difficult for HR people because they've had to pivot and adapt, you know, constantly, and be that guiding, shining light and really address things like mental health in the workplace and burnout and stress, which has increased hugely over this period of time. So an awful lot of HR teams and L&D teams have been looking at employee wellness and all of those kind of programs, putting in place great healthcare benefits and all of those kind of things, but they often don't look at themselves. And my God, they can be brutal when it comes to themselves. You know, so often I deal with HR practitioners crying and beating themselves up for things they don't know, mistakes that they have made, problems that they have with the CEO or another member of a management or leadership team, fear around processes that they have never encountered before but are now responsible for leading. And so the role of HR can be lonely. If you're lucky enough to work as part of a team, you know, that loneliness maybe is not so keenly felt, certainly in standalone roles. A HR practitioner can feel very isolated with the weight of the organization on their shoulders and really beating themselves up for what they don't know. We provide a support line and support for HR people. And you'd be surprised at how much of that time is simply helping somebody talk about themselves in a better way, present themselves in a better way to the senior management team, and, you know, have that little bit of support. So Anna, you know, I can see an absolute market in HR alone for the kind of work that you're talking about, because I think HR people can be really brutal with themselves. And there's so many things that can and do go wrong in a HR function on a daily basis, because it's where every problem of the organization lands.
Absolutely. I mean, I am genuinely concerned about HR staff at this point, 18 months in, and obviously in Europe and beyond, more than 18 months now. And, you know, I always see HR as the heart and the pulse takers of the organization, but they're not often seen that way. They're also the butt of the brutality within the organization often. Oh, HR or human resources, this, this. There's a lot of that that comes back to them. So they naturally absorb the trauma and stress within the organization, but they're also the butt of the inner brutality that's coming out of CEOs, CFOs, COOs, whoever else, right? And that's actually a cultural thing. That's been assimilated as normal, and it's not okay because they are the caregivers of the organization and they need to be looked after. Now, the problem with HR teams as an outsider looking in from a consultant point of view is that often HR teams are left to their own devices to look after themselves. So you've got injured parties trying to help other injured parties. And I really think there is a value in having an external consultant or supporter, whatever you call it, practitioner, helping that team maybe on a monthly basis, or I don't know what basis, but whatever the team needs, as they go, right, I just need to say this. So they've got somewhere to put their stress. They need to have somewhere to put it, because otherwise it's staying inside the team and inadvertently poisoning each other, right? We affect each other. And I think if we don't heed that HR are injured from what they've been through in the last 18 months, then we are going to see a massive dropout of HR. And it's such a shame, because actually the skills and expertise that they have just gained from this 18 months is going to be pure gold for them going forward. Because they are, yes, there's always going to be challenges, but if you've been able to install those skills and draw upon them in the future, what a shame to lose those people because they're burning out, or they can't face it, or they're not being acknowledged. And I think that we have to make that cultural shift, that it's not okay for HR to be almost sidelined as somebody we go when we're desperate. They are at the heart of the organization. Does that make sense? That's how I see it. And maybe I'm wrong, but as an outsider, I see that, I feel it. And I'm really worried about them because I think it's being ignored.
Yeah. And they're probably not looking for themselves what they would look for the wider employee body.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they can also reflect the brutality of the senior team as well, if that exists as a culture within an organization. And sometimes I do, when I speak to HR people, and you know, I ask them to stand back and reflect on maybe something they've been asked to do, and ask them, is it right? Is it in keeping with their own value position and their own morals and values generally? And if not, what do they need to do to at least bring forward an argument that, listen, we need to think about this for these reasons. If a decision is ultimately made to proceed, at least somebody will have stood up, and it's easier to live with yourself afterwards, irrespective of what is required within the role. HR can be hard. It can be brutal. It can, like you say, be the butt of you know, negativity coming from the employee body, coming from the senior management team, sometimes from the CEO. So it's a difficult role. When even things are going wrong, but when things are going well, you know, you're central to everything that's marvelous.
Yeah, I think that's a good business case for HR teams doing the work around kindness and companionability to self, because when that brutality is coming out from the outside in, it won't trigger them in the same way. If they've got their own inner brutality, that somebody else's will trigger that. So they're then dealing with their own and the external source also. Whereas if the inner brutality comes into you and you haven't got it, it bounces off again. Or you find words and go, actually, that's not okay. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's really poisonous. That's why kindness isn't really a fluffy non-entity. It creates a stability and a robustness that helps you pivot with flexibility all of the time, because you're not falling out with yourself, and you can't let yourself down if you've incorporated that so entirely, which means you're not at the mercy of somebody else's brutality. You might not be keen on it, but you're not at the mercy of it. That's really important in HR.
I think that's the foundation. It's probably the main thing we can take away from today's discussion, which has been absolutely fantastic, I must say. And I think a lot of very practical kind of takeaways for HR people. I think the first one we spoke about is that kind of contentment, kind of companionability within yourself. I think a lot of the basis for this and spreading that message of kind of kindness and spreading the effects of it is working on that inner contentment, inner companionability, and then bringing people along with you on that journey. So I think that was something that really jumped out to me. I suppose when we're talking about how do we bring this into an organization as well, if you are having challenges with bringing up something like kindness, something like a topic which may be perceived as fluffy, as we said, even though it's absolutely not, then how do we speak about it? How do we deliver that? And I think a couple of the things you said there are very important. It's the business case for it. It's looking at the effects of the absence of it more than anything else. It's turning down the dial on brutality. I think that was one quote that I think you mentioned there that would be, I think, would perk the ears of any leadership team anywhere. It's turning down the dial on brutality, because as you said, it's all about energy. And if there's negative energy in an organization, well, that's going to ripple through, I suppose, the whole way down to the bottom line. And I think then, I suppose, the final point then on HR teams in particular, it's just looking at your own kind of processes, your own approach, and building that resilience. I think the main thing you said there, and it was, I suppose, if HR teams can build that, rewire that inner brutality, it'll deflect off, and you'll be in a better position to help anyone that comes to you with those issues. So absolutely fantastic discussion. I really appreciate it, and a lot of very good takeaways. And thank you again. So thank you again, I suppose, Mary and Anna, for a very insightful discussion. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. Do also keep an eye out for our recent webinar where we had Anna on as a guest to talk about these topics and much more. And also keep an eye out for our mental health in the workplace guide, which we will be sharing in our show notes as well. So thank you everyone again. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, do feel free to get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Anna.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.